kids are trying themselves out on the world. We are here to support them while they experience and experiment with being part of the world.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I am excited to talk with another great set of innovators in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Melissa Dominguez, principal, and Jenny Long, walkabout advisor at Jefferson County Open School. So, Melissa and Jenny, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
We're happy to be here.
I am very excited to have this conversation, actually. And so let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Jefferson County Open School is a public option school located in Lakewood, Colorado. And since 1970, the Open School has provided a viable, vibrant, and life-changing alternative to the conventional of schooling. And the JCOS features a pre-K or pre-kindergarten through 12th grade environment with multi-age groupings throughout the school. And at all levels, students work closely with their advisor in the development of their personal curriculum. Open School students do not receive grades of any kind. They travel the world, both close to home and far afield, as they participate in extensive self-designed and self-guided, I suspect, directed and evaluated curriculum. And so we are super, super excited about this conversation because this is truly out of the box. So Melissa, let's start with you and give us the sort of 100,000 foot view about why did a traditional school district say, hey, we need to do something like this too, because that is not the norm.
So first of all, it was 54 years ago when this first started, and a group of parents and educators and students came together to say that they wanted something more for their students. It wasn't about necessarily something better, although I think they probably thought that too, but it was more about we want the academics that our students have access to, but we also want our students to be seen as the whole people that they are, and we want their personal, their social, and their intellectual to be attended to in a schooling environment. And so that is what happened. A small group approached the school district. It was before the charter school movement, so we are not a charter school. We're an option. We're the original option in Jeffco Public Schools district, and it wasn't really the district that said we need this. It was a grassroots group of educators and parents, really.
You know, actually, that doesn't surprise me, right? Oftentimes we'll have that. What does surprise me is that this happened 54 years ago.
Yeah.
And that it's still off and running. That is remarkable. It's so awesome. I can't even tell you, ladies, how excited I am about this conversation. Super, super near and dear to my heart. I get super jazzed about this. So I am really curious, though. So 54 years of doing this, again, a really long time, and I would argue fairly unprecedented. And, you know, in my journeys around the world looking at innovative school programs, I've not quite bumped up against something quite like this. So I'm really excited about it. And I'm curious then, and I know we'll get into the nuts and bolts about how it works, and we'll get to talk about the walkabout and all the amazing things that Jenny gets to do with that. But I am curious, how does this program influence or impact the rest of the district? And how many kids or families are we talking about here to set some context?
Yeah, so we have in our whole school, we have 570 students, preschool through 12th grade in the building. Of those students, about 225 of them are walkabout students, are 9th through 12th graders. And so we're actually a pretty small school, and we're all here on the same campus. Our students are invited to volunteer with the younger students. Our older students volunteer with the younger students. Kids are mixing all the time. There are shared spaces throughout the building that kids mix in, but they also have separate spaces within the school. As far as the school district is concerned, I think that there are people in the school district who are very interested in what's happening at the Open School. And we at the Open School, we end up with visitors from around the world and across the nation all the time. That happens a lot. People want to come and see our school. There are books that are about or feature the open school out there. I mean, you're around long enough and you're doing something like this, you're going to have people be interested. But right here at home, we sometimes experience possibly a little bit more annoyance than appreciation for our model. But that doesn't mean that there aren't people at the school district who really do appreciate what we're trying to do. Right now, the school district has a big initiative that they're excited about, which is called High School Reimagined. And we're really excited for students in this school district to experience any conversation about reimagining high school, but we haven't necessarily been invited in to talk about what it looks like when you do reimagine high school, which is interesting because this is, I mean, there's been a little bit of interest about that, but not necessarily sort of on the ground, I think. I think there's some mixed feelings. Go ahead, Jenny. What do you want to say?
Well, I think the other thing to add for context is that Jeffco Schools is a huge district.
Enormous.
So we are not only a small school, but we are a tiny portion of Jeffco Schools. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of how we sometimes sort of fly under the radar amongst our own district, even when we're getting attention nationally and internationally amongst the alternative ed world for what we're doing. But it is worth noting that the district has supported us to continue to do things the way we do them mm-hmm. for over 50 years.
Absolutely.
And that includes traveling in the wilderness, traveling internationally, doing things in so many ways that are different than their policies and practices. And so we are constantly kind of pushing their comfort zone of what they can support. And they do continue to support us. Mm-hmm. And I think that is because we are successful, because it works. And also because that frequently when the district has a student or a family that is having trouble finding successful placement anywhere else in this huge district, they are able to find a safe and successful experience with us. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, I like to think there's sort of this acknowledgement that we do solve some problems mm-hmm. for the district sometimes, even if we don't necessarily get fanfare for it.
Yeah, no, I understand that completely, right? Because, you know, like you said, the outside world is going, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever, right? But sometimes it is really hard, especially in really big districts. You know, my local district here is a really huge, big urban district. And so I do understand sort of that dichotomy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's dig in just a little bit then and talk about sort of the work that happens. I mean, one of the things, I guess, just for a step back, one of the things that is so intriguing about this particular model is, and you made reference to it a moment ago about the, you know, the when the kids become high school kids, they get to start this process about walkabout, right? And so one of you sort of share with us sort of high level sort of what that is and why. And then I'd love to get into bits of the nuts and bolts, because the other thing I'm really curious about, just to give you a heads up about where we're going to go with this conversation, I'm really, really curious about the transcripting process about this. People really want to understand that. So talk to me about walkabout.
So tell me specifically, what would you like to know about walkabout?
Well, I mean, I think that some folks are going to say, oh, I've heard that term. I think I know what that means. But folks listen to Learning in Blocks from all over the world. So don't assume that, right? So help us understand. So what is the concept? Why is it such a foundational element, honestly, of the program itself?
So our program is sort of based on the understanding of the founders of Walkabout, of this process of Walkabout. It's an Aboriginal kind of a word. It's not
tradition.
Our word. It's a tradition. Mm-hmm. And so for us, what that translates into is this idea of kids, and this could completely be our or the founder's misunderstanding of what Walkabout really means, but here at the Open School, what that means for us is that kids are trying themselves out on the world, that we are here to support them as a support system while they experience and experiment with being part of the world, with the different passages that the students are gonna complete before they can graduate from Open School. So that is what we mean when we talk about walkabout. It's our high school. Our walkabout is our high school. So, yeah.
And it's this notion of, you know, borrowing from that walkabout tradition, mm-hmm. that this is students really making that transition into adulthood. And that coming of age ritual is like more intentional and formalized. And the kids actually have their own understandings of it. And so Melissa referred to the passages. And the cornerstone of Walkabout is that students complete 6 passages in order to graduate. They also have to do some other things to graduate, but the passages are a big deal. And they are these 6 ambitious, rigorous, meaningful, self-directed projects that fall into different categories. And for each of those projects, there are requirements, and students need to propose these projects, they need to complete them, and then they need to document them and finish them. And then everything else in their curriculum, whether it be the classes they take, the trips they go on, the relationships they have, the community service that they complete, their relationship with the community here at school, all those things are connected to these passages that kids complete in order to graduate.
And I would say that the passages are the cornerstone for that Walkabout program. And then the backbone of that program is the advising mm-hmm. system, which is a process by which every ninth grader who comes into the open school is assigned in sort of a sorting hat kind of experience, where we draw names from a hat or from a box of some sort. And they are assigned then an advisor. So Jenny is assigned students, you know, who come in, new students either coming up from our school or coming from the outside, and assigned students every year. And then those students are ideally with that same person as their advisor until they graduate from high school. So that person is going to sort of work with them through that moment. And the advisor is important, but so is the advising group. They're going to spend time. We prioritize advising to deliver all sorts of curriculum to students and to connect with them. It's not really possible at the open school to remain anonymous. So if that's what a kid wants to do, that's an example of a thing a person is maybe not good for. Like, we're going to want to be in that relationship with kids. We're going to want to know them. And the advisor is going to see them every single day, because there's time prioritized in our schedule every single day for some form of advising group. There's individual advising, and that person is their mentor, their coach, their guide through their experience at the open school. So,
and just to be clear, that's then a group of 9th through 12th graders.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of built-in kind of peer mentorship that happens, you know, that as I'm working with my students who are closer to graduating, my younger students are witnessing that or supporting that or part of it. And those older students are supporting those younger kids. So it's a real ecology, you know, that keeps turning over. And Melissa's right. Like, I am an art teacher here, but my first and primary role is that I'm an advisor. And it's also the part of the job that is so rewarding and meaningful that I think it really explains why we have a staff that, you know, like myself, people spend their entire careers here. We don't really have a lot of turnover. People come and go, but we don't have a ton of turnover because the staff are like invested in this community and in this process.
And if I had one piece, like, I know people, you said, like, listen from all over the world, and I've actually listened to a few episodes. And what I would say is, whenever I tell somebody, if you want to try and do anything like this, your first step is to create an advising system. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the most important. The relationship is the most important thing.
It is. And we know there's data that supports it, that the relationships between adults and kids, especially as those kids find their feet in their own way in the world, are going to be so incredibly important. So I appreciate that so much.
Yeah. The advisor is also the relationship point person for the families as well. Yeah. And so the guardians, the parents, the family of that student also have the advisor in the building as their regular go-to person. And we have a lot of family communication all the way through the program, all the way up till kids graduate.
I love that very much. And I appreciate that, because it is so critically important. Before we sort of get into the weeds about some of the sort of passage process, because there's multiple categories and I think they're all really, really interesting and they clearly serve different purposes. So I'd love to dig into that a little bit. But again, because our listeners do come from so many different places, so help us understand the sort of context of the Walkabout versus how the students get the rest of their coursework or the content, or is it all interwoven together? Is it broken out? Just sort of set the sort of stage for how learning takes place in this environment.
Well, we operate with our graduation expectations. We have 15 graduation expectations that fall evenly into 3 categories: personal, social, and intellectual. And in order for a student to graduate from the open school, they need to demonstrate that they have competency, or excellence in all of those things. Included in those graduation expectations are the requirements to graduate from Jeffco Public Schools from the state of Colorado. So those are integrated into those graduation expectations. But our graduation expectations go much further than what the state or the district require. So students can meet those graduation expectations through many different parts of our curriculum. And that includes their passage work, it includes the trips, it includes the service, but we also do teach algebra, and we also do, you know, have a Spanish class. Like, we have classes that would be also recognizable in a conventional setting, and students meet some of the graduation expectations, which include things like 3 lab-based sciences, 4 English language arts experiences, that kind of thing, through our curriculum. So it is all really integrated.
Yeah, and you would think about the word walkabout at Open School is just another word for the high school. Like, that's the program you're part of. Before walkabout, you have the Foundations program, which is 7th and 8th grade. Before that, you have the Bridges program, which is 6th grade. And then, anyway, Intermediate Area, Early Learning Center, Kindergarten. Like, it just, you know, that's just the name of that area.
Mm-hmm. It's just a path through the programming.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
So then those, like the algebra class or the Spanish class, just again for clarity, are those courses taught like they are at another high school across town? Or is it because it's at the Open School that everything about the way instruction and learning happens is different? Does it look and feel the same as it would if I went to a different?
No.
Good. Thank you so much. I was so terrified. You're going to say, oh yeah, it's just the same. And I'm like,
No. But I mean, like, algebra is an example of a class that's called Algebra 1, right? Like, it's also been called Fundamentals of Math. That's been a name of an algebra class. So sometimes we'll name things sort of wacky things, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But no, what is true is that they're going to be using the district curriculum as a tool to deliver that information to students, but the students are not getting graded on that information. They might experience more of a collaborative, cooperative kind of an experience. There are very few desks in this building. There's almost all exclusively tables that kids are working at together. So it's going to look different.
Like, for example, I think geometry is kind of a fun example, is that there are multiple different ways that students can get geometry here and then include that in their transcript. You can study geometry in a skateboarding class where they're building ramps and they're studying geometry that way. There's a geometry in construction, which is building anything from picnic tables to birdhouses to all different things that are then utilized around the building. And then there's, for the students who want it, there's a somewhat more traditional sit down and study geometry in a classroom. But there are almost no textbooks in this school, unless they are kind of referenced as a tool. There's very little of, like, read this chapter and answer the questions at the end. Like, that doesn't really happen. There's the projects that happen. There's, you know, a lot of student direction that happen, a lot of hands-on stuff that happens. And with that, included in that is what we were talking about earlier, which is, again, the relationships. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you have your relationship with your advisor, but you're also going to have a relationship with your chemistry teacher because she can't help it. Like, she's going to make
it pretty awesome.
And everybody mm-hmm. is on a first name basis. Mm-hmm. And your chemistry teacher is someone that you maybe also went camping with earlier in the year. Or if you didn't go camping with, she's also the person who teaches the fiber arts program. So you get to sit and knit with her. Like, there's this overall community and these relationships amongst people that make their way into the classroom. And there are certainly kids who are motivated to be successful in their chemistry class because they went camping with their chemistry teacher. So that relationship part comes back again in the classroom too.
Yeah.
And then to connect to transcripts, just to think about transcripts. So our students write a narrative transcript. They write their own transcript at the end. They throughout their high school experience, and then at the end, they sort of
refine
that, and then that's their transcript, and it's a narrative, and it's anywhere from 13 to this year there was a 41 pager. So that's what happens, and you can transcribe an experience into your transcript if you have evaluated it, done a self-evaluation, which you turned into the teacher or the leader of that experience, and then they've written back to you with their comments on that, then that is an experience that can make it into your transcript. If you don't complete something, or if you don't evaluate it with this narrative evaluation, then it's not eligible to go into your transcript.
And that is because we really value authentic assessment, mm-hmm. right? So instead of having someone on the outside tell you what you learned or whether or not you were successful, as a student, you need to reflect on your own learning and be able to describe like what was challenging, what did you struggle with, how did you overcome that, how is this content that you were investigating in this class, how is it meaningful to you, what connections do you make to your life with it? And in that way, you know, I can have 20 kids in a class and they can really have 20 different experiences, because as they are really authentically assessing it, they have different things that become really meaningful for them about it. And as the art teacher, maybe for some kids, it's about the self-expression. And for other kids, it's about the cultural context. And for other kids, it might be about like the hands-on craftsmanship aspect of whatever it is they're making. And that's okay. Like as the teacher, I don't need to say everyone needs to have the same outcome. I can let kids have different outcomes from the same class and still transcribe that. There's such a loop. It's this constant cycle, because the other thing that we do around here is that students are constantly setting goals, and they set goals before any class, any trip, all sorts of experiences. And those goals, to loop back, are based on our graduation expectations. So whenever kids set goals, and they're used to it, they set goals that fall into personal, social, and intellectual categories. And then they set strategies for meeting those goals. And then at the end, they assess their own success at meeting those goals. And maybe, you know, out of that comes some new goals that they want to set for next time, or, you know, something that they learned that they didn't expect.
Yeah, that's really fabulous. I love that so much. I'm super curious how the post-secondary institutions think about this transcripting program, because I get that question all the time when we talk about these really innovative programs, these places that are doing competency-based or mastery, take your pick, right? And oftentimes what I'll hear is, oh, but that's going to be such a disadvantage to our kids. And, you know, you actually hear just the opposite, but very few people really understand that. So I'm super curious, for your kiddos, how does the world of post-secondary think about this transcripting?
First of all, our kids go to college across every institution in Colorado, but then across the nation and sometimes the world. We've got kids who are, you know, in other countries as well. So kids are doing higher ed for sure. That's happening. And last year, I mean, Jenny, I think you had a student who had a great success in applying.
And it is a really cool part of the advisory system, because then every kid who, you know, has a post-secondary counselor built in, and they have a post-secondary counselor who's known them since ninth grade, right? And sometimes before that. Our kids are radically successful at getting into a wide variety of schools, from big universities to small liberal arts schools to trade schools. And I don't know what the latest statistics are, but the statistics were like in the 80% range, mm-hmm. In terms of our kids going on to post-secondary education. And last time anyone did longitudinal study about it, one of the things I thought was fascinating was that the vast majority of our kids actually finished degrees, mm-hmm. whereas the national average is somewhere around 50%. There are things that kids, there are skills and resiliencies and strategies that kids are getting from this program that mean that they're actually finishing their degrees out there. Mm-hmm. So what Melissa's referring to is, last year I had an advisee. They were a really awesome person, really great community member, really good student, but I wouldn't say they were exceptionally different than my other advisees. You know, like it's not like they were somehow above or beyond, but they just set a goal that they wanted to apply to a bunch of different schools, and they specifically applied to sort of small liberal arts schools on the East Coast, like Bennington and College of the Atlantic and Sarah Lawrence and all these sort of different schools. They were accepted everywhere they applied, and they were offered really significant scholarships at those schools as well. And they are currently starting their freshman year at the College of the Atlantic on the coast of Maine, which only takes 100 kids a year. So in general, colleges and universities really like our students because our students can talk about their own education, because they come into their campuses with some leadership skills already and so an understanding of community and things to offer in those departments. And also because our students tend to be pretty good writers, because they have to do so much writing to document their own learning from their portfolios all the way to their transcripts. Our kids write a lot.
Yeah. Self-directed learners are highly desirable by post-secondary institutions, right? And that's exactly what I'm finding, too, when I ask the question of those colleges and universities. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, we're really intrigued by this. Yes, it's not the norm, but we've found that, you know, when we take these kiddos, that we see a different sort of level of success from them, you know, in terms of, you know, what the experiences that they had before they came to the institution are experiences that basically load them up with skills that a lot of freshmen, for example, don't necessarily have, or they have to learn it, you know, while they're driving that particular freshman car, if you will. So I appreciate that. Let's talk just a little bit then about the passageways themselves, because the kids have to complete six of these, but they're really intriguing and they have different purposes and themes. And so share with us just a little bit about what these passages are and why they've been crafted the way that they were.
So they are, and this is hard because it doesn't matter how many times you say this, I almost always will forget one.
I'm right here.
Okay, thank you. So there's the adventure passage, which is a personal quest. Not necessarily can be, I'm going to hike that 14er or all the 14ers, but could also be, I want to create a relationship with my alcoholic father. Like it could be, you know, something. It's an adventure. It's a personal adventure for that person. So there's adventure. There's practical skills, which is I'm going to learn how to do something which in general has been done for me in my life. And so this is, I'm going to learn how to do it for myself. A lot of times kids do like a cooking thing, or we had a kid just recently who worked with a family member to go out to visit them in California and rent a space from them in their home, like separate from their home, and like paid rent and had this experience of being on their own kind of in a really safe environment. So that was, I think, that kid's practical skills passage. There's logical inquiry, which is where you're going to explore the scientific process, and you're going to maybe come up with an experiment or something that you want to guess and you want to test, sort of a thing. Come up with a hypothesis.
Do you want to do the other three?
Do the other three.
Okay. And then there's the global awareness passage, which is about taking an issue or a topic that a kid is passionate about and making real change for that in the world. And for that one, they need to write a college level research paper and do service and educate the community about it. There's also the career exploration passage, which is a chance for kids to practice the act of exploring in a career. We like are careful to make it clear that it isn't about making a commitment to what you're going to do when you grow up, but it gives you a chance to like practice, you know, having an internship and interviewing professionals in the field and that kind of thing. And then the final passage is the creativity passage, and that is where kids take something to a level of excellence. And that might be something in the arts, visual or performing arts, but it has also been really unexpected things like preparing for a marathon or something like that. And so the process that kids use is that they have to write a proposal for a passage when they have an idea, and they work with their advisor on that. They have a formal proposal meeting with their advisor and another adult in the building who will be their consultant, and their triad, which is a small group of peers who support them in all of their passages, and they all support each other. Then they do the passage, and then at the end, as part of the wrap-up, a similar process where they write documentation about what they did, and they have their artifacts, and they have a meeting again. So kids go through these. It's the very, very rare kid who, like, proposes a passage, does it, wraps it up, and moves on to the next one. The vast majority of kids have a few going at a time. There's not a specific order that you need to do them in. That's a really organic process that you work out with your advisor. But there are a number of classes in our curriculum that are designed to support kids in the passage process. So there's a class that kids can take to help support writing the research paper for their global awareness passage. There are classes that kids take to help them with the scientific method and setting up experiments and analyzing data for their lab report, for their logical inquiry passage, that kind of thing.
Pretty remarkable.
And the topics that kids choose, I mean, I can't even begin to express the breadth of what kids do for their passages. Anything from like a logical inquiry passage where a kid is analyzing microplastics in alpine lakes to someone who's adopted and meeting their birth family, to someone who is, you know, mastering a second language, to someone who is looking at the effect of press on our democracy. Yeah. So every conceivable topic.
Wow. Pretty amazing. And I just love that you've created such an incredibly robust learner-centered environment, right? That ecosystem that you are immersed in. You're as much a part of the ecosystem as all of those learners are, right? That's the other thing that's beautiful about it. It is truly a community the way you describe it. And I think that that's a really rare thing to find in K-12 education today. So I love that very much. I always like to first be mindful of time, but also just to wrap up recognizing that as people come from around the world, this is a 54-year journey, and so it's been a long, and I have no doubt that over the years, it's ebbed and flowed and morphed, and, you know, it doesn't look anything like it did, you know, in that very first iteration, because nothing ever does. I'm super curious, sort of as we close the conversation from each of you, you know, in the time that you've been part of this journey, you know, what has surprised you?
It's not surprising the ways that it needs to change based on the ways that the world is changing. I think it's surprising how much it has stayed the same.
Yeah.
And how much the kids I was working with 20 years ago remind me of the kids that I'm working with today. That there is that through line. Mm-hmm. There are things for sure that have changed about the open school. And there are some of the more, some of the cultural things, you know, like it would have been unthinkable to the founders that we would have security at school or that you would have to buzz in, you know, to get into the building, that kind of thing. But that is us responding to the world as it is. That's what it takes for us to continue to function and be viable. But ultimately, the stuff that is the most important to the open school, which I would say is advising community, travel, and those self-directed projects have continued to be powerful and effective this whole time. Mm-hmm. And I think if anything, in my time, I would say the school has gotten better and stronger because in response to the world, we've had to tighten up some things. You know, we've had to get better about our documentation. We've had to get better in terms of our accountability. And I think it's only made our program stronger.
Yeah, I would agree with Jenny that if something's surprising to me, I agree with you. It is how little has changed. Recently, the founding principal of the Walkabout, Arnie Langberg, wrote his memoirs. And I have that book. It's on my shelf. He came here and gave it to us, and Arnie's in his 90s now. And it's delightful whenever he comes and visits us. But reading how the things that we still do were set in motion at that time and reading from Arnie's perspective, his experience of having that begin, that's pretty powerful to do and to recognize the things that are the same, you know, the things that were foundational and were good ideas and we're still doing them. And so that's pretty great. Right now, for me, I'm pretty interested in this idea of the next 50 years and how we can ensure what can I do from my place in the school to ensure that my legacy gets to be at least partly ensuring that we've solidified some things, documented some things, you know, kept some things, written some stuff down so that this school continues to be an option for kids because it's so important. It's a bit of a beacon, you know, it's a beacon. And when people find it, a lot of times that's exactly how they feel. They feel pretty encouraged that it exists. And so I want it to be here for kids.
Yeah, I think I hear that often about all these great, amazing, transformative educational endeavors, right? And I hear that frequently that, you know, this kid or this family found a home, right? And it's incredibly powerful and meaningful for their own journey. So I love that very much. Yeah. Melissa and Jenny, I want to thank you both for taking time out of your day to share what's happening with the Open School, you know, for our listeners to talk about, you know, all of the things you see and what's happening. I could spend hours talking with the two of you. And so I really appreciate you taking a moment out of your day to share with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Mm-hmm. And also, you're so invited to come and visit us.
Anytime.
I'd love to host you, so let us know.
I can't wait, and I will take you up on that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin. And join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.